Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. In Jordan this week, dozens of journalists demonstrated near the Royal Palace in Amman. They were protesting against the government's decision to block access to about 300 of the country's 400 local news websites. Jordanian journalists are also using the courts to challenge the law, which was enacted last fall and enforced this month. And they're finding creative ways to get around the online blockades. The government says the new requirements are meant to professionalize and institutionalize online news sites that have proliferated in recent years. But free media advocates call this a blatant act of censorship designed to stop all criticism of King Abdullah. On the program today, from Jordan's capital and largest city, is the editor-in-chief of one of those blocked websites. Daoud Kutab founded the independent news provider AmanNet and is the recipient of a prestigious International Press Freedom Award. And to provide a wider perspective on Jordan's censorship are Gillian York, the director of Freedom of Expression at Electronic Frontier Foundation, and Reina Stamboliska, a research fellow in Paris and a freelance writer who recently wrote an analysis on Jordan's move to block what it calls unlicensed websites. Gillian will join us a little bit later from Tunisia, where she's attending the annual Freedom Online Coalition conference. So Reina and Daoud, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Daoud, there are reports that the Jordanian government yesterday unblocked nine more websites. What are the latest developments from what the government's doing and from what you're doing and other website providers?
The latest news, as you said, is that nine websites have applied for licensing and have been registered and therefore unblocked. But seven new websites, including one we created as a mirror for AmanNet, we created AmanNet.org, has been blocked this afternoon. So it's a cat and mouse game, and it's something that we've been warning the government not to get involved in, that it's much better to cooperate and to find agreement on the issue of regulating and professionalizing the sector rather than just using a sledgehammer against anybody that the government is not happy with. And so far we have not succeeded in convincing the government that cooperation is better than competition or, you know, just breaking up people's work.
Right. And Reina, I want to both of you, but first Reina, put some perspective on this. A few weeks before the website shutdowns, King Abdullah spoke strongly in favor of widening the free flow of information in Jordan. And even Queen Noor, through her Twitter account, supported the mobilization against the change in the media law. Reina and Daoud, why did the government seemingly reverse direction?
Daoud, you want to take
this
one?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer that question.
Okay.
In advance, as we know, we don't really know a lot. As you said, the king and also Princess Reima, a very well-known journalist turned into royalty, and the prime minister all spoke about the need to find a positive process. We were in a session with Julian, actually, attended about the multi-stakeholder approach where we all work together in finding solutions. Something happened on the weekend last in which provoked the government into this wide range application. And there's three rumors or three scenarios. One is that some websites attacked the king personally, which is against the Jordanian constitution, in a way that the government could not be quiet about. We're not sure if that's true. The second is that there has been unrest in the southern town of Ma'an, and there was a video showing that soldiers had killed or the police killed two locals, and that video has gone viral, and I think they were worried about that. And the third is that the government is about to raise the prices of electricity, And they basically want to be quiet when this happens, that they want to control the process. For all these reasons are just speculations. We really don't know what caused the government and the royal palace to change course and all of a sudden to make a decision without really going back and talk to anybody about it.
All right. And Raina, can you add anything to that, or do you agree with Dowd?
Well, I agree. And also I would like to add a few words on the more and more increasing criticism that the government faces from the general population.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond anything that we can say about the wake of the Arab Spring, so-called Arab Spring,
mm-hmm.
There have been growing, increasing number of comments on posted on news websites, on forums, and on different online web platforms that are really, really critical to the government. So now it's a question of raising electricity bills, but it's also about raising bread costs, mm-hmm. and other prices.
Okay.
And other prices that people relate to immediately. So this kind of blocking websites to allegedly make them more professional is really not a clear statement from the
right.
government.
Okay.
It's more of let's block everything that criticizes us.
Okay. And Jillian's now with us from Tunis. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, is the subject of Jordan's online media law coming up at the conference there?
Well, the conference hasn't started yet, but I'm sure that it will be. We have several Jordanian speakers set to speak, and I know that this is a hot topic at the moment.
Okay. And could you put this in some perspective as far as the region? It's kind of interesting that Tunisia is making progress in moving toward a free media, and at the same time, Jordan seems to be reversing itself. Can you talk about the kind of the general trend in the Mideast right now?
Sure. Yeah. So actually, I would say that it's hard to really pinpoint a trend because what Jordan's doing is actually fairly unprecedented in terms of strategy for the region. I mean, historically speaking, the Middle East and North Africa is a region that tends to license journalists, that requires journalists to be licensed by the government. And this is not universally true, but in most cases. And so this is really sort of an extension of that type of strategy to the internet. And so by requiring news sites to be licensed, it's very similar to the old school strategy of requiring journalists to be licensed.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Jordan's really the first country in the region that's done that, although globally speaking, Singapore is actually in the middle of trying to do the same thing. And so I do see this perhaps becoming a trend in the future. But yeah, if we look at the rest of the region right now, Tunisia's really kind of turned itself around from being one of the, let's say, top five governments in the world when it came to online censorship to now, being mostly free. I mean, there are still concerns here, of course, but they've really been fighting hard to keep the internet open. And if you look at the rest of the region, we've seen both positive developments over the past couple of years and negative ones. Morocco has pulled back its internet censorship, looks to be, moving towards the right track. But then Jordan, which was sort of unexpected for me as an outside observer, going in this direction is really disappointing. And so I think we're going to be seeing a lot of these shifts and backslides and maybe some new positive developments as well as the political developments continue to happen in the region.
Okay. And right before you joined us, I had asked Dowd and Raina what their theories were about why this happened in Jordan. Why do you think that Jordan has done this?
Sure. I got to hear Dawood's answer, and so I certainly defer to him as the expert on Jordan. But at the same time, I mean, I guess if I were to look at this, not from a Jordanian perspective necessarily, but from a perspective of why any government might want to license news sites, I think a lot of it is a fear, this idea that by allowing bloggers and citizen journalists to roam freely, that we're allowing misinformation to proliferate. And so, if you look to some of the, Egypt is isn't doing the same thing, but there's still, at the same time, there's political pressure to shut down certain independent websites. We just saw the closure of one of Egypt's best independent news publications. And it wasn't by the government, but it was still sort of political pressure that triggered that. And so when you see this, you know, this sort of phenomenon broadly, I think a lot of it does have to do with the desire by government to regulate what can be reported about them.
Right.
It's that simple.
Okay. And I'll ask you and then have Daoud and Raina jump in, but what has been the response to the blocked sites in within Jordan? I know you are in touch with online activists in Jordan. What are they doing in response?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard to tell how big their forces are. You know, again, as an outside observer, for all I know, they could be a total minority, but it's been really heartening for me anyway as a free speech activist to see some of the measures they've taken. There's been a lot of really great information campaigns around this, very fact-based information, you know, attempts to spread information about what this means, what the law looks like, and how to fight it. There's an effort right now for self-regulation modeled on the semi-successful Marco Civil in Brazil, which was a self-regulatory strategy developed by civil society and academia to create a positive structure for regulating the internet. And so there's an attempt to do that in Jordan now. There have also been some more sort of visually powerful campaigns, such as a funeral for the open internet, where, you know, a casket is driven around on top of a car, you know, proclaiming the death of the open internet. And so that sort of thing, you know, has also been part of the strategy.
And Jordan has some strong citizens organizations. Are there condemnations of the media law having an effect? And what about calls for lifting the ban made by international groups such as Human Rights Watch, Reporters Without Borders, and the Committee to Protect Journalists?
Yeah, there have been lots of some international calls to do that. There's been calls, you know, from all of those international human rights groups, from my organization, the EFF, from Human Rights Watch, but then also from local organizations. The Jordan Open Source Association has really taken the lead on this, and, you know, we've seen other local organizations step up to the plate as well. So there is, you know, there is widespread condemnation from free speech groups, for sure.
Okay. And Daoud, if you could give us even a closer local perspective on what the reactions have been. We talked about the protests and the cat and mouse game, and also what else are they doing?
Well, the protest is interesting because while you would expect us individuals who are the victims of this to be involved in a protest, we were heartened that there was a number of civil society groups that also joined the protest. We had teachers, the newly established teachers union. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting because their speaker said, if it wasn't for your website, our teachers union would not have been independent. And so they are kind of saying, we're paying you back because you were there defending us for the last 2 years when the government didn't want to allow us to have a teachers union. And now that we have a union, it's our kind of base. The simplest thing we can do is stand with you. We had also some retired military people. We had people from... It's interesting, people from a company were protesting against the telephone company, Orange, which is one of the ISPs that's actually in carrying out the blockade, also came to kind of speak in our demonstration and saying, again, you're the only ones because the print media, which gets a lot of advertising from the telecoms, have not written a word about our protests, and it's only the websites that are writing stories about our protests. So, you know, we're here to stand with you the way you stood with us. So it's quite interesting that the government, whether knowing it or not, they're actually kind of grouping everybody who's really after independent points of view. So they're grouping us together, and I'm not sure it's to their long-term advantage that they've done that. I also commented in a number of places that they actually are teaching a lot of people what the Tunisians and Assyrians and Egyptians have learned for the last 2 years, which is how to get around the mm-hmm. blockade and how to, you know, create proxies and how to use various applications to beat the system. And again, I mean, we look at our statistics on Google Analytics, and we have not lost much traffic, even though we've been blocked in Jordan.
Well, that's interesting.
And the only kind of reason for that is people are finding ways to get around. Of course, everybody around the world can see us, and it's only a punishment to the Jordanian public, which, again, it's quite amazing that a country would punish its own people from having information. So it just fits into to a trend that we also saw today, the closure of an Arab human rights organization. There was the censorship on a film the other day in a cultural center. So we're very worried that Jordan, which has a lot of international and Western support because of Syria and the geopolitics, seems to be not worried about the international campaign because they basically have, you know, the U.S. and other countries have their back, and they probably got green light from somewhere in Washington, and therefore we've not seen a word from the White House, the State Department, or any U.S. official about this totally anti-democratic, anti-freedom act. I mean, I wonder if an enemy of the U.S. had done that, what the U.S. would have said.
Yeah, it's interesting. Raina or Jillian, would you like to comment on the lack of U.S. response to this?
Well, my guess is Jillian is more relevant here, but the U.S. is generally having a quite hard time at the moment with the PRISM scandal. Jillian?
The PRISM, the
NSA, the National Security Agency,
right.
Worldwide spying activities.
Right.
Jillian?
Yeah. So PRISM, this has been this has been quite a headache the past week for us, of course. This is a lot of this is stuff that we knew or suspected already. And so, you know, there's been a number of elements to this, not just PRISM, but also the revelations about the NSA cooperating, or rather Verizon, one of our telecoms, cooperating with the NSA on spying on American phone calls. And so, you know, we've known about this for years. We've talked about AT&T collaborating with the NSA, but the revelations about PRISM, which mostly affect non-U.S. citizens, have been really contentious in the U.S. You've seen a lot of people arguing, well, you know, we have nothing to hide. You've seen, pretty prominent columnists and journalists argue that this is acceptable. And, you know, my position on this is that it's absolutely unacceptable. Just the sheer amount of data that they've been tracking on foreign citizens, or non-U.S. citizens, rather, is pretty unbelievable. It was a several billion, so we're talking about Jordan. There were around 12 billion reports generated through this, according to a Guardian report.
And Jordan, Jordan's one of the
top.
And Jordan is one of the top five countries in this.
Yes, yeah, that's what the Guardian reported. It was Jordan. I think Jordan was the only Arab country in the top five, actually, which was surprising to me.
Daoud, how do you think? What do you think about that?
Well, the Jordanian collaboration with different U.S. agencies is quite well known. We saw that when the WikiLeaks came out, and we're seeing it again, and it unfortunately it doesn't move a lot of people in this part of the world. What worries us is that the Jordan, because of its close alliance with the U.S., is basically using that alliance to carry out actions that normally would be against the value system that the U.S. would adhere to, and the U.S. normally would take a stand on an issue like this, and they have done none of that. They've been totally silent. Even though privately, I've spoken to U.S. diplomats in Amman, and they're not happy with what happened. But nobody's speaking out. And, you know, the National Press Club in Washington issued a very strong statement saying, we American taxpayers are giving money to Jordan, we're giving $25 million for democracy and human rights, and so on. Why doesn't President Obama and, you know, Senate Secretary Kerry speak out about this? And still nothing came out.
Okay. Well, I want to move the conversation back to the website blockade and also political reforms and some of the past crackdowns in Jordan. But before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. For this topic, we'll have a list of censored news sites in Jordan, classified by theme. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbi.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at globaljourn, global J-O-U-R-N. Now, Raina, I wanted to ask about something you pointed out in your article for the website. You mentioned that this isn't the first time that Jordan has cracked down on the independent media. can you kind of brief us on some of the previous cases?
Jordan has started, as every country, when the internet entered the country in 96, as in every country in the world, it was totally free. But then very quickly afterwards, in 2001, restrictions were introduced in internet cafes. And then back in 2002, there was already a first website to be blocked. Then, well, more websites were reported to be blocked in 2010, including blogs and forums. And around that time, around 2009, despite a code of conduct that aimed at fostering a free and independent media, the Amman-based Center for Defending the Freedom of Journalists concluded that media freedoms deteriorated in 2009. And also the Open Net Initiative highlighted that selective censorship of politically oriented online content exists in Jordan, and also added that there is a lot of self-censorship of journalists in the cyberspace in particular, because that's their focus, but also in offline, so to speak, press. Then various other regulations were introduced, like in 2010, vaguely worded information systems law was approved by the then government. And it was actually very, very worrying, because one of its articles authorizes the police to actually access computers that are used by journalists from the electronic press. And under this law, actually bloggers and all kind of citizen and independent journalists would be actually treated the same way as website holders of that promote pornography or terrorism. And in this same year, in 2010, what was also very pervert, so to say, is that the Court of Cassation classified websites as publications, which made them subject to penalties.
Just like the print publications.
Yeah, exactly. And so the websites were considered in the same terms as other publications.
Okay.
So this very law was actually amended in 2012.
Right. Okay.
So the amendments, which today translate into this crackdown on online free expression, the amendments actually introduced the obligation for each website to have an editor-in-chief that has been a member of the Jordan Press Association, and also makes the editor-in-chief liable for the comments that are posted by netizens, by people using the service. So after the amendments were accepted, quite a few websites actually switched off the comment section for, you know, not being subjected to
prosecution
and stuff. So, and there was like a recent report from...
Hey, Reina, we just have a bit, we're running out of time, so I just want to give Dawood the last word about how his, just overall, do you think that this crackdown is going to lead to more self-censorship, or do you think that actually has awakened some sort of the sentiments of freedom in Jordan?
As I said earlier, I think the Jordanian public now, which is the one that actually the blocking against, is waking up to learning how to use the internet to bypass the blockade. And many have, as seen by our records on our analytics site. Mm-hmm. What is really worrisome is that the government of Jordan still doesn't really realize that they're going against the trend of history. They're going against what the whole world is going for, and they are not learning the lesson that it's much better to cooperate and to try to encourage the news websites be more professional to agree on self-regulatory forums rather than a regulatory form. I mean, I keep saying that it's like crushing a fly with the, you know, a sledgehammer. They can use much lighter things, and they can cooperate with the website to kind of remove some of the genuinely unprofessional news sites, but to basically block everybody, whether they're good or bad, whether they're professional or not, seems to be counterproductive.
And is it so? What about political reform, or briefly?
Well, I think this is, as I said, it's a very negative sign towards political reform. Jordan has basically turned the corner on the Arab Spring. They're no longer worried about public protests. They've found ways to weaken the Islamic groups in Jordan. And they're really worried only about the public side. They've done a stellar job, in a way, in taking care of public protests. And they think this is the only forum that's left for people to kind of protest. And that's why they seem to be digging their heels in keeping the blockade on. And I think they're wrong. I think they're just keeping the lid on a boiling pot. And once they lift their hands again, it's going to boil in their face. I think it's a mistaken policy that doesn't seem to be based on a long-term solution to a problem that 70% of the population is young, it's access to the internet, knows how to use the internet. I just think that unless they shut down the entire internet, they're going to be facing a problem of people using Facebook, using social media, using other creative ways to get around the blockade.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it there. We've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us were AmanNet founder Daoud Kitab, Electric Frontier Foundation's Jillian York, and freelance writer Raina Stamboliska. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Trevor Harris. Raymond Tungagar is our executive producer. Elisa Lopez Aguada was our lead producer. Elisa is up next with Free Press Watch. And join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now, Free Press Watch, a weekly segment on Global Journalist, where we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Elisa Lopez. Today's news comes from Committee to Protect Journalists, Reporters Without Borders, Al Jazeera, and The Guardian. Two journalists are reported missing in Syria since last Friday. The two, a reporter and a photographer, work for the French radio station Europe One. They entered the country earlier this month to cover the civil war. French President François Hollande suggested the journalists could have been kidnapped at the checkpoint because they were in a dangerous area of Syria. Reporters Without Borders and the Committee to Protect Journalists have called for their immediate release. At least 21 journalists were abducted in 2012 while covering the civil war, and not all of them have been released or found at this time. In Singapore, the Media Development Authority has announced a new amendment to the country's media law. It would require local media organizations to obtain licenses costing almost $40,000. The amendment would apply to those online news sites that report an average of at least one article per week on Singapore's news and current affairs. It will also apply to those sites that are visited by 50,000 unique IP addresses from Singapore each month. All that must occur over a 2 month period. The MDA also has authorization to remove content that, quote, undermines racial or religious harmony. Activists say the law will restrict internet freedom and especially grassroots journalism. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. I'm Elisa Lopez.